You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the author of a new book breaks down the science of smell and tells us why some smells have the power to bring us back in time to our earlier memories. First, it is the year-end member drive here on the Ideas Network. Rachel Vasquez joins me. Maybe you've already given this year or you make ongoing monthly gifts. Today, make a special year-end gift for the programs you rely on all year long. Takes just a few minutes at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thank you so much to everyone who gave last hour. This hour, we are looking for 10 people to join in.
These hourly goals are important. They help us stay on track financially so we can keep the discussions going strong here on the Ideas Network. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Federal and state tax dollars, which do come from listeners like you, provide important funding for WPR programs. However, voluntary listener contributions are actually the biggest piece of support for WPR programs.
You make the difference. You make the quality, variety, and independence of programs on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Because WPR matters to you, make a personal contribution to pay for the programs you listen to at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Take advantage of a really special opportunity this drive to provide hunger relief in your area. Ask for one of the food bank thank you gifts. There are options available at $10 or $20 a month.
Alliant Energy is partnering with us right now. They're matching every meal given through the food bank thank you gifts. That can mean an extra 12,500 meals for your community. Increase your impact with that gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's right. Every member drive, we hear from listeners all over the country, even all over the world, who reach out and want to support WPR. People from Texas, Alaska, Japan, and Germany, they all tell us they've found something special here at Wisconsin Public Radio.
Your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes WPR what it is, a resource that you enjoy, one that people treasure around the state, around the country, around the world. Remember, we got that note from that guy in Finland who picked up our broadcast signal. Hey, if you're listening somehow, if we're bouncing over to you through the airwaves, love to hear from you and make your gift in Finnish or American currency. We'll take it either way.
We'll take all of it. Any of it, anyone is welcome to donate. And we know that you listen to WPR because you count on the fact-based reporting, the interesting discussions, and the great music, no matter where you are, maybe in Finland. You probably agree Wisconsin is a better place because we all have access to high-quality news and entertainment programming.
That quality is possible thanks to donors, people we call members. You're a listener. Now take the next step and become a member. Your donation of, say, $120 or $10 a month makes Wisconsin a place where great radio is available to everyone. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Looking for 10 more people to join in to support WPR programs like Central Time in the next about 50 minutes. WPR is listener powered, and that's why your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
Rachel, that would be the euro. Apparently, Finland does use the euro. I wasn't sure about that. Okay. I had to double check it myself.
Good to know.
You're always learning stuff here. I'm always learning stuff here on the Ideas Network. Hey, here's an added bonus for supporting the programs you love. Your donation enters you into a drawing for a year-long subscription for NPR-inspired coffee and wine, along with Wisconsin cheeses. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Sustainers, if you're already making those ongoing monthly gifts, you are automatically entered. If you're not a sustainer yet, sign up now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you are a sustainer making ongoing monthly gifts, thank you so much. Think about today, making today the day that you increase your support of WPR by $5 or maybe even $10 a month, whatever amount works for you and your budget. The important part is that you do it right now at WPR.org or 888 202-2552.
We heard from Joe Beth in Madison, who says, I give because WPR is quality programming for all. Thank you, Joe Beth. And Jeffrey in Middleton says, I love Central Time and the morning show. Jeffrey, glad we can bookend your day with Kate Archer Kent and me on the air. Thank you so much for giving. How about you? Make your gift in support of the programs you count on online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thanks for your support. This is Central Time. Have you ever wondered what moon dust smells like? How about the cannon fire that Civil War soldiers smelled? How about the smell of the inside of your own body? Those are just a few of the questions our next guest tackles in her new book, along with how smell works, why it's such a powerful sense, and how you can sharpen your own sense of smell. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a smell that's really distinctive to you? For better or worse, one that always brings you back to a memory of your past, maybe, or reminds you of a specific place? Do you have a favorite smell or one you can't stand? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jude Stewart is a journalist and the author of multiple books. Her latest is Revelations in Air, a guidebook to smell. Jude, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rob. It's great to be here.
Well, in the past, I think I've talked to you about color and design. What got you into smell?
Oh, good question. Yeah, I have written, my previous two books are about graphic design and sort of visual culture. So, you know, I always kind of thought of myself as an images person. But, you know, they weren't quite doing it for me. And I don't know if I even could have articulated that feeling that images weren't quite enough until I happened to go to an art exhibit that was organized around smell. And it was so exhilarating and kind of like upsetting and all these feelings all at once. And I just thought, wow, this is everywhere and I've not been paying attention to it. And I don't understand what's happening to me. So I, you know, fell down the rabbit hole of researching that and came up with this book.
All right, give us the basics. And it's complicated, but give us the basics of what happens when I smell, I don't know, anything.
Sure. So the process of smelling biologically is called olfaction. And really what it is airborne molecules of the thing that you're smelling travel up your nose, and they go all the way up to that place where if you wear glasses, your glasses would rest on the top of your nose. And there is a thing called the olfactory epithelium. And inside of that are these little neurons that go down, and they're called olfactory receptors. So the smelly molecule will bind with a receptor, and we think it's sort of like a key fitting a lock, but it is really fundamentally a mystery that scientists don't yet understand. And then it sends a little pulse up to your olfactory bulbs, which is basically the closest part of your brain to reaching the outside world. That's basically what happens.
And there's a lot of our brain that's devoted to sorting out smells, right? Which I did not know until I read your book.
Yeah, it is a little crazy. And it's interesting. So just to continue that journey kind of deeper into the brain, you know, I mentioned that I couldn't put words a lot of times to the way I felt about the smells that I was experiencing this exhibit. And there's a reason for that. That's actually called by scientists olfactory verbal gap. The reason is in your brain. So smell is different from your other senses in that it kind of bypasses the new part of your brain, the frontal lobe and the higher order processing that does verbalizing and stuff. Instead, it's plugged into the older part of your brain. It's specifically, it's a lot entangled with your amygdala, which has to do with your emotions, and also your hippocampus, which has to do with memory. So there's a reason why memory and emotion come back so vividly with smell.
And that reminds me of something that's really kind of mind-blowing to me. You write that, at least there's a theory that our whole sense of emotions might have evolved on the machinery that we had for, and still have, that we have for smell.
Yeah, right. Getting to your point about why so much of our brain might be devoted to this. Animals use smells for all kinds of things, you know, to navigate, to evaluate who they're dealing with, whether or not this is a threat or somebody they might want to mate with, and all these different things. And so many of the signals that we do, and we think about us navigating as humans through the world, emotions and understanding emotional cues is very important. So there is actually a theory out there that, you know, what we used to do with smell evolutionarily way back in the past to navigate the world, we now do with emotion and social cues.
Talking to Jude Stewart about her new book, Revelations in Air, a guidebook to smell. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Julie is with us in Wales. Julie, hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What'd you want to tell us about?
Okay, so this was really interesting. I didn't know I was pregnant the first time, and my sense of smell, I noticed it right away. I was like, wow, I had no idea I was pregnant yet. And I was like, I can really like smell a lot of things. And then the second time I was pregnant, I was like, I got to be pregnant because my sense of smell is like off the charts. So is there some kind of connection between smell and being pregnant?
Ooh. Oh, that's a great question, Julian. I'm really envious. I hope it was a pleasant experience for you rather than the opposite. there is a connection. And I personally, when I was pregnant, really kind of secretly hoped to be a super smeller and was not. I really had one moment where I was very hungry in a restaurant and I smelled the steak that was arriving all the way across the room. And I thought, oh, that's my steak. And indeed it was. I can't tell you off the bat why that's the case, but it is an observed phenomenon. It's something I'm going to look into more because I've been talking about it with friends more and more.
Julie, thanks for that call. We're talking to author Jude Stewart, her new book is Revelations in Air, A Guidebook to Smell. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a question about smells, why things smell the way they do, and experience a favorite smell, call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Jude Stewart about her new book, Revelations in Air, A Guidebook to Smell. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, great topic. When I was a kid, my grandpa would take me to the farm and we would cut the grass. And I remember smelling all the wildflowers and the smell of the grass. We'd walk through the forest to the beaver dam and I could smell the trees and the pines. And we'd get home, and Grandma would be cooking supper, and the food, I remember the smells. It was fantastic. So what I wonder is, over time, am I losing a capacity to smell, or are food additives and pollution affecting my ability to smell what I used to smell when I was a kid?
Jeff, thanks for the call, and thanks. You painted a great smellscape there, actually. Jude, what do you think? Do we get worse at smelling over time? Is there something about pollution or anything like that changing our smellscape?
Well, the answer has kind of two layers. First off, I love the smellscape. I was just going to say that same thing. And in fact, it feels so vivid because I think it's traveling through your memory. It's a very early memory. And you know, you're bringing that back. It sounds like you repeated that ritual year after year, Jeff. So, you know, no doubt it's a bit colored and pumped up by your memory. But it's true that as we get older in general, our sense of smell does decline a little bit. But fear not, because it also is something that we can build back up. And moreover, really just paying attention to anything is going to make you better at it. It's smelling is a skill like anything else. So, you know, anybody who feels like they're smelling less than they were when they were a child and would like to change that, I mean, I'm hoping that the book will help with that. I have a couple fun exercises throughout the book that enable you to kind of practice and get better.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. Okay, Jude, I think of myself as having a pretty good sense of smell, and I have no way to back up that statement at all. But you just mentioned you have those exercises to where anybody can improve their sense of smell. Can you give us an easy one we could try at home maybe tonight?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think of two quick ones. So one, I would start a little smell journal when I started out working on this book, and it was really simple. It was on my phone, and I just jotted down whenever I noticed a smell and, you know, kind of pushed myself a little bit to articulate what that smell was other than, you know, identifying it. And what was nice about that is it was simple and it got me noticing smells in general. I always noticed more just so I could have one for the day. And the other funny thing about that was the journal became this kind of beautifully evocative thing. Like I could remember what else happened that day because it was the day I smelled the lilacs coming out in Chicago or whatever it was. So that's one exercise. And then another one you could just do tonight if you happen to cook a lot as I do. I have a lot of different vinegars in my house. And so you can just pour out all the different vinegars you have into small bowls and smell them. And at first they all smell like vinegar, but then really quickly you start to notice the differences. And it's pretty easy to, you know, tell the difference between balsamic or rice wine or champagne vinegar or whatever it is. And so that gives you like a sense of confidence about, oh, okay, I can actually sort of discern more than I realize. And it's just a fun exercise with friends.
We heard from Tim on the Ideas Network Facebook page, who says a favorite smell is the smell of a new book. And I'll admit, Jude, people send us books here because we're a radio station that talks about books. And pre-COVID, we'd have these books that smelled really good, and we'd pass them around. Now, you have a chapter not on new books, but on what defines the smell of old books. What goes into that smell?
Right. Oh, I love the smell of a new book too. But yeah, old books, I think, have a really distinctive smell. And I was kind of curious to look into that when you think about going into like a used bookstore and that wall of smell will hit you. And I was surprised to discover that there is a definite period of time where the paper stock that was used in books changed a lot. And it coincided with when we moved to acid-free paper. So I think it was in the 70s, I believe. And acid-free paper is good in the sense that it keeps books from degrading. So newer books are less smelly, but that's a good thing. But the older books, what we're smelling is that sense of decomposition that's happening with the older paper. So it's a beautiful smell. It's a decaying smell. It speaks to a lot of things. And it, for me, evokes a lot of emotions.
One thing I loved in the book, you know, when we go to the movies or on TV, they can do things with our sense of vision and our sense of sound. There have been failed efforts to have some kind of smell component to the movie or TV experience. Could you talk about why they failed?
Oh, yeah. So that was actually a sort of a thing that got me into this project, this book project, was looking into the so-called smell-o-vision concepts. Like one technology after another would roll out over the course of the 20th century. And the idea was always like, you'll watch the movie and then you'll smell the roses that you see on the screen and it will draw you into the romance or whatever it was. And they all were kind of train wrecks. And partly some of them were technological, you know, problems. But it's interesting to kind of figure out why that would be. Like the smells would layer up on themselves and sort of eventually become very weird smelling in the room. But it was kind of interesting to notice the reactions of the audience, that they would come and they buy tickets and go want to come see some movie with smell-o-vision and then be sort of weirdly, smugly happy when it didn't work out. And I found that kind of interesting. So I was curious, like, why didn't it work out? And then also, why is it that we hold ourselves a little bit aloof from smell, like we're a little worried about it penetrating us too intimately. So that awkwardness was interesting to me too, that resistance.
Now, you look at the impacts that smells have on us, and I think a lot of people these days might want something that helps us calm down and relax. Among the smells you dug deeper into, what are the ones that seem to have the best chill out effect?
Oh, great question. Lavender, by far. That chapter has a lot to do with the aromatherapy movement. And there's some interesting clinical studies that support the claims of aromatherapy around lavender. So lavender, you might have noticed, is in all kinds of bath products and beauty products and things. And it's an interesting smell to just contemplate on its own because it has this kind of bright and kind of cold and floral, but edged with cold feeling. And so when you actually sit down and smell it, you feel kind of braced. And it's kind of not the way I remembered it when I was thinking about bath bombs with lavender or whatever in them. So it was interesting in and of itself to contemplate, but definitely lavender would be the one.
All right. I'm going to ask you, I'll say mine first. Do you have a smell that you like, but it's weird you like it? Mine was back before smoking was banned indoors. When I go to play a show at a bar, the smell of the stale smoke and the stale beer from the night before, it's terrible. It's a bad smell, but it said like rock music to me. And yeah. I got a lot of nostalgia for it, even though it's terrible. Do you have anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Love me some stinks. That's totally true. I liked pipe tobacco, actually. A friend of mine smokes a pipe, and he got me interested in not smoking the pipe, but smelling his different tobaccos. And I was just never tired of that smell and the varieties of it. It was really quite beautiful. I also kind of took as a task trying to get to know the smell of durian, which is the super stinky fruit that comes from Southeast Asia. And people will eat it often in ice cream. So it stinks. It smells like rotting onions and feces and a lot of stuff. Yum. It's really gross smelling, but it tastes really beautiful. It has this creamy, velvety texture and sweet. And so we made a whole bunch of durian ice cream during the pandemic. I live here in Chicago and we could get durian down the street. And so I made my family eat it and eventually we all liked it.
I love it. Jude, thanks for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, thanks, Rob. It was a pleasure. And don't forget to donate, everybody.
Thanks. That's Jude Stewart. She's a journalist who writes about design and the author of multiple books. Her latest is Revelations in Air, a guidebook to smell. Now it's the year-end member drive. Rachel Vasquez joins me. This is your chance to support the programs that you count on every day on the Ideas Network, programs that keep you informed, in touch, and inspired. Your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is super important as we end the year and look forward to another year.
We've got about 30 minutes left in this hour, and we are looking for 6 more people to join in. Make your gift to support the programs that you enjoy and that you rely on every day.
WPR programs are listener powered. That means your gift right now makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Rob, I loved that last segment. Maybe I'm a little bit biased. I produced that one, but it was so cool. We got to learn all about smell, something that a lot of us do without even thinking, but something that is so connected to our lives, our memories, maybe like we learned our emotions. This is such a great example of the kinds of interesting conversations you can count on from Central Time.
WPR is listener supported. That means you and your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Make the many topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose an amount that works for you, then make your gift.
If you're looking for an easy way to make a gift to WPR, become a sustaining member, making ongoing automatic monthly contributions from your bank account or your credit card.
A lot of people give $10 or $15 a month that way. Some give $100. The amount's up to you. As a sustainer, you're an ongoing member of Wisconsin Public Radio, providing reliable funding for your favorite radio station or web service. Start today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, every time you listen to WPR, you learn something new, something about smell, something about the news. Maybe it is news of the day or a personal anecdote. Maybe it's history or pop culture. There is always something to spark your interest.
Listening to WPR reminds you that life is fascinating and learning makes life richer. That engagement you feel when you listen, that is worth your support. Give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Think about what you spend money on every day. Maybe it's coffee or takeout. Well, that really adds up quick. It is easy to spend on things that are part of your routine.
WPR is part of your routine too. It's your news source, your conversation starter, your place to learn. So spend some money on it today. Start with a dollar a day. That's about $30 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We need 6 more people to support WPR programs like Central Time in the next 30 minutes, and then we will meet our goal. WPR is listener powered, and that's why your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
Choose a food bank gift when you give $10 or $20 or more. Find out how that works when you give, but do it right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, the search for life on other planets could get a big boost in the coming years thanks to new research and telescopes getting launched into space. We'll talk to a science journalist about what we're discovering and what we hope to find out. Right now, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio year-end member drive. Rachel Vasquez joins me. Your support is vital to all the programs on WPR. It's the largest source of funding. Take just a few minutes right now to support the programs you count on, programs like Central Time, with your year-end gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The clock is ticking down. We've got about 25 minutes left in this hour, and we only need 3 more people to join in to step up and join the WPR family. When you give, you fund Central Time and all of the WPR programs that you count on. So give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On Central Time, we help you keep up with some of the top news stories of the day and dig into the details behind the headlines. Also interesting and thought-provoking topics like just today, the science of smell, the science of the search for extraterrestrial life. We invite you to call in. We have some fun sometimes along the way, too, or we sure try to. Central Time is your go-to place for an informative and interesting afternoon.
We couldn't have that fun. We couldn't bring those conversations to you without your financial support. It is the biggest piece of funding here at WPR. So make a contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Everyone should make the gift that works for them. For you, that might be a gift of $100 or $200 a month.
It could be what you pay for cable or your cell phone plan. Listening to WPR is something you do every single day. So put a value on it, like other things that are important to you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
What would be better? A year's supply of coffee, wine, or cheese? This member drive? You don't have to decide. Make a gift for the WPR programs you rely on year-round, and you could win a year of coffee, wine, and cheese. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Find all the details at WPR.org/drawing. You can't win if you don't enter, so make your gift of any amount right now. Here's how.
Make that gift, get entered online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Rachel Vasquez on our year-end member drive. Your support makes the WPR programs you count on possible. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, really does make a difference.
And you know, we know that you value your time, and we value your time too. So giving to WPR takes just a few minutes. Tell us your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay.
It's quick, it's easy to do, and your gift right now really helps. Take the next few minutes to support the station that you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've made a habit of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now make a habit of donating. It's a good habit, one that you can be proud of. So get started right now. Help be one of those last three people we need to meet our goal with your donation of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it's your chance to get entered into that drawing for a year-long subscription for NPR-inspired coffee and wine, along with Wisconsin cheese. No contributions necessary. You can find out more at WPR.org/drawing, but you can automatically get entered when you give any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. If you're a sustainer, if you're already making those monthly gifts, good news, you are already entered in that drawing.
If you're not a sustainer, you can do it right now. It is so easy to set up. They're just monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll provide ongoing support for the programs that you love, like Central Time, and get automatically entered in drawings we have during our member drives.
Laura in Ferryville says, thank you for the context your journalists provide during a most trying time. I've learned so much from WPR. Thanks, Laura. Abigail in Chippewa Falls says, I'm supporting accuracy in reporting. Abigail, thanks so much. Really do appreciate it. Now it's your turn. Make your gift online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Astronomers have discovered a lot in recent years about planets well beyond our solar system and whether they could potentially support life. That search for other forms of life could get a big boost in the near future with new technologies, including space telescopes, coming online. And last month, the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine released its once-every-decade report on the astronomy field. It says answering that question of whether we're alone in space will be a top priority for astronomers in the years ahead. Lee Billings is a senior editor for Space and Physics for Scientific American. He's author of the book 5 Billion Years of Solitude, The Search for Life Among the Stars. Lee, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Glad to be here, Rob.
Well, it seems like a tall order, trying to find needles of life in the haystack of the universe. Why is that search for so important for a lot of astronomers?
Indeed, it is pretty tough. Not just important for astronomers. It's kind of important for everyone. I mean, we're talking about a timeless question that we've contemplated, you know, since our ancestors, I think, first looked up at the sky tens, hundreds of thousands of years ago and wondered where all those other stars were. You know, at the time, we didn't know they were stars, other suns, other planetary systems. We thought maybe they were campfires or the gods, something like that. But getting back to it, this is a question that's really fundamental to the nature of what it means to be human, not only satisfying our own deep curiosity about our cosmic context, but also, yeah, learning whether or not we are actually truly alone. We are on the cusp of being able to do that in our lifetimes for the first time ever in any human's lifetime. So I think it's for everybody.
I want to talk some about the momentum here, because when I was growing up, we knew there were probably planets, you know, around other stars. We couldn't see them, and now we can see them, and there are lots of them that we found, right?
That's right. I think the latest tally, depending on who you ask, if it's NASA versus other databases, we're coming up on 5,000 known exoplanets beyond the solar system. Some other people would say it's more like 7 or even 8,000. It has to do with what you consider a planet. A lot of the planets we found, we haven't actually seen directly. We're only inferring their presence based on how they alter the motions or the behavior of their stars. So we look at the star, and then from how it acts, we can basically tell that there are planets there. But what the future is going to be is seeing these planets directly and taking pictures of them, which is very, very, very hard to do for a little tiny planet like Earth around a big bright star like the Sun. So that's the future. And the reason why you want to take a picture is because that's going to let you do other things too, like search for certain gases and mixtures of chemicals that might exist in the atmosphere or on the surface to tell you that life might be there. Things like water or oxygen, which here on Earth, oxygen mostly comes from photosynthesis. So it's those sorts of signatures we could get and we can see in a little pale blue dot around another star somewhere else in the Milky Way that might tell us that we're not alone or might show us instead that we are alone.
I mentioned that Astro 2020 report. You wrote about it. This is kind of the big picture vision. What do they lay out in that report about what our next steps are going to be?
Ooh, too much to say here in the time we've got. I'll summarize that the most important thing is twofold, I should say. So it's not two important things. The first thing is that NASA's James Webb Space Telescope is going to launch later this month, December 22nd, if all goes well. Knock on wood there. And that's going to be a very important tool for studying some types of exoplanets or signs of life, but only really a very small subset. A handful of worlds that are around very small, very cool stars called red dwarf stars. And Webb will be able to look at a small sample of those planets and maybe look for signs of life or habitability on them. But again, you know, we're talking about a handful of planets, maybe 5, maybe 10, maybe not even that many. And so what needs to happen next is what this report, Astro 2020, has laid out. And the plan, in a nutshell, is to launch something kind of like a super Hubble, something with a light gathering mirror on the order of 6 or even 7 meters in size, to look in ultraviolet and infrared and optical light at a very large number of stars and look for Earth-like planets around Sun-like stars and get a robust sample. So instead of looking at maybe 5 or 10, maybe you'll look at 100. Or maybe you'll look at 50 or 25. And when you have that larger sample size, that's going to give you more confidence in your conclusion. So if you look at 5 stars with something like a James Webb telescope and 5 Earth-like planets and you don't see any signs of life, you don't really know what you've learned. You could have just been unlucky. But if you can get another telescope up there to look at a wider sample of planets around stars, you can be much more confident in what you see. If you look at 25 or 50 or 100 stars, 100 or Earth-like planets, and you don't see any signs of life or maybe even anything like Earth, that should give you more confidence that our own little corner of the universe might be, dare I say, a little special.
That's a super Hubble. It took a lot to get the original Hubble up there. Like, how is this really within our grasp, an orbital telescope that could do stuff like this?
Well, that's a great question, Rob. I think it is, but it is problematic to think about because, yes, Hubble had a lot of problems, right? It had its wonky mirror, and they needed to send up space shuttles to give it glasses, right, to fix it. And future space shuttle missions visited it to upgrade its instruments and so on and so forth. And that's why it's still around today, more than 20 years after it launched. Similarly, it's proposed successor, the Webb telescope that's launching later this year, that's been in development for 20 years. It's cost over $10 billion. These are huge numbers and large lengths of time. And the question is that sustainable? I don't know if it's sustainable if we make every telescope like Webb, if we try to do it just like that. But the notion and what this report has talked about is that there are other, newer, better ways to build these sorts of things where we can manage risks more appropriately. We can invest in technology development early on, and that could give us much more affordable telescopes on a much more rapid timescale. That said, we do need to be patient. The official party line now for the U.S. astronomers and NASA is that, you know, we're looking at something maybe in the first half of the 2040s that could do this. It takes a long time to build these things. Maybe we can increase the cadence. Maybe we get a little faster. But to do that, I think there needs to be probably more money and also some changes to our procedures.
Talking to Lee Billings, Senior Editor for Space and Physics for Scientific American, looking at the search for life on other planets and other solar systems. Lee, let's flip things around. If somebody was looking here at Earth, what would the signs be that we not only have life here, but so we've got, I hope I could say this, intelligent life here on Earth?
Yeah. So that's kind of a funny thought experiment to do. It really depends on when you look. So if you look right now, you know, the main thing you're going to see is that, well, there is water all over the surface. You can figure that out not only by color, but also by spectroscopy and figure out that there's water vapor in the atmosphere. So you could see water and that we have a big ocean. You could see signs of land, maybe even some vegetation. But the real keystone of life that people would be looking for, what a lot of people consider kind of the holy grail measurement would be for Earth, something you can see on Earth, a combination of oxygen, which, as we mentioned, comes from photosynthesis, plants, and certain kinds of microorganisms, as well as methane. Methane is a greenhouse gas and is produced by certain kinds of bacteria that live in the guts of cows and in swamps and things like that. What's interesting is when you have these two gases coexisting in an atmosphere, that's not really something they should do according to the laws of thermodynamics. In an atmosphere like Earth's, when you have methane and oxygen coming together, they should really kind of annihilate each other and turn into, I think, water vapor and carbon dioxide. And so the fact you see these two gases coexisting in Earth's atmosphere is a very strong indication that something, some process, life, is replenishing them constantly at very large scales. That's what you could call a biosignature. Now, real quick, if you did something like turned, let's say, an Arecibo observatory-sized radio dish towards our planet, and our planet happened to send out a radio message with another Arecibo-sized radio dish straight towards you across the other side of the galaxy, you could detect that. It would take about 100,000 years for you to hear it, for it to get to you from point A to point B, but you could do that. We already have the capabilities to broadcast and tight beam our presence, a so-called technosignature, to other places in the Milky Way. But we have to put that in perspective, right? Our signals are still relatively faint and hard to see. And we've only been broadcasting for, you know, some number of decades. You could say maybe a little more than a century. Whereas we've had this other signature of, for instance, oxygen and methane in our atmosphere. That's been broadcasting for circa a billion years. So that's probably the more powerful thing that people would notice, or the aliens would notice, I should say.
Is there going to be a thing where we spot something in another star system and say, aha, this is 100% for sure life? Or is this going to be a thing where, like, maybe percentages we think?
Yeah, Rob, it is that latter thing, unfortunately. But that's also kind of the nature of science, right? You know, you have to take the best data you can and then extrapolate from there, make reasonable speculations, and revise your ideas, your hypothesis, if you get better data. So, you know, you think about two planets over, or one planet over, we have Mars, right? We have Mars as a planet of robots. It's covered with rovers and surrounded by orbiters and things like that. And we don't know if life is there. Granted, it's kind of a quiet, sedate world. So life hasn't exactly crept into all its nooks and crannies, even if it is there and made a really obvious home for itself. Similarly, on Venus, we have spacecraft there. And recently, last year, you know, people were talking about this gas, phosphine gas, maybe existing in the Venusian atmosphere as a potential sign of microbes being there somehow in the atmosphere producing it. But we don't know that for sure. It's a questionable measurement. So yeah, the data will be noisy at first. The answer, of course, is just to build a bigger telescope, I guess, or, you know, eventually maybe even think about sending things there directly, engaging in remote interstellar travel, which is a kind of wild idea. These are all things for the future. But, you know, I think the point is, again, that we are on the threshold of actually beginning to grapple with and meaningfully answer these questions in a scientifically rigorous way, which is something we haven't been able to do for the entirety of humanity's history. So we have to have the long view here. We're at the very beginning of what could be a very grand quest of learning our place in the cosmos by really finding out what surrounds us in our nearest neighboring star systems.
That's a good place to leave it, Lee. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. Anytime.
That's Lee Billings, Senior Editor for Space and Physics at Scientific American, author of the book 5 Billion Years of Solitude. We talked to him about how new technologies are helping astronomers search for life elsewhere in the universe. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio year-end member drive. Rachel Vasquez joins me, and you could join in and support the programs you count on all year long with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Literally just minutes left on this hour, and we need two more people to join in. Your gift right now is so important because when you give, you support the programs that you count on every day.
This drive doesn't go on for too much longer, by the way, just till Saturday. That means this is the second to last day to give during Central Time. Take that opportunity. Thank you so much if you've already given. If not, why not do it now? Give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
In that last segment, we got to talk about the search for alien life, something a lot of us have probably wondered about from one time or another, and something that you don't get to hear about that much in the news. We got to talk to somebody who really knows his stuff, and that means that you probably learned something new. These are the interesting conversations that you can count on from Central Time.
WPR is listener supported. That means your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes that and all the topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose the amount that works for you and then make your gift.
This drive, Alliant Energy is partnering with WPR to help provide hunger relief in Wisconsin. They'll match every meal raised through the food bank thank you gifts up to $5,000 worth of meals.
And that means your thank you gift then will provide an additional 25 or 50 meals to families in your area. Ask for yours now. When you give $10 or $20 a month, you thank you for making a difference for your neighbors and the WPR programs you love at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
My name's Kelly Davis, and I live in Whitewater. I like Wisconsin Public Radio because it has this focus on all things Wisconsin, which is very helpful for learning the culture of the state. And then also, once you're here, it helps you feel connected to the community. I became a sustaining member of WPR because it was easy and I didn't have to think about it. And I knew every month I didn't have to make a conscious choice to do what is right. It just happens. Like, if I am listening to Wisconsin Public Radio this much, I should be giving back to it.
To make a difference in your community and beyond, visit WPR.org.
Become a sustainer right now online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Central Time, Rob Ferret here with Rachel Vasquez. Your support today of Wisconsin Public Radio keeps all the programs you enjoy going strong. Whether you give $10 a month or $100 a month, we really do appreciate and count on your gift.
And if you're already a sustaining member of WPR, making ongoing monthly donations, thank you so much. Because of your reliable support, we're better able to plan for the future.
As 2021 draws to a close and you think about how important WPR is in your life, consider increasing your donation by $5 or $10 a month. It's easy to do. It really makes a difference. Just go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
We get to hear from a lot of people during member drives, and we always hear from people who tell us that they're first-time donors because they've gotten their first job out of college, or we've heard from people who turned 30 and realized, I'm a grown-up now, so it is time to give to WPR.
Giving money to something you believe in, a service you count on, is a great way to mark a new phase of your life. Many first-time donors give $10 or $20 a month, but you choose the amount that's right for you. Then go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And with good news, we've got about 3 minutes left in this hour, and we have met our goal, but let's not slow down on that progress. We still want to hear from you. Your gift today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 ensures a bright future for the programs that you rely on.
You can choose one of the food bank gifts when you give $10 or $20 a month. Alliant Energy is partnering with us. They're going to match every meal raised through the food bank thank you gift up to $5,000 worth of meals. Make your gift, ask for your food bank thank you, get it matched at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
There's never been a better time to become a sustaining member. It is easy to set up, convenient, ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. Just get started and do it right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Get entered into that drawing for a year's subscription to NPR-inspired coffee and wine, plus Wisconsin cheese to round it out. You're automatically entered when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Be counted in 2021. Take action and give the programs that you rely on a strong start in the new year with your gift today. Do it right now at WPR.org, or you can give us a call at 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much if you've already given. If not, take just a few minutes right now. Go online to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Join the Central Time team with your gift, and thank you.